Final hour of Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you. Darren McFarland is off today. Should be back with us tomorrow. And as promised, Elliot Friedman joins us for his regular time slot every Thursday at this time. Elliot, thanks a lot for joining us once again. Great excitement last night, as we know we're going to have at least one Game 7. I was a little worried there, and I'm not so sure we don't have at least two.
I guarantee
tonight
it.
Is over. Yeah, Chase guaranteed that the Avalanche would come through with a victory last night, and they did.
I heard about this. That's a bold prediction. Did you put your money where your mouth is?
I did. There was a wager, and Darren now has to be my intern for a day.
This is like Seinfeld. He's got to be your butler.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. So, you know, it really does. Like it really that. Appears, Elliot, that. You know, Colorado, when they get to their when they rev it up at high level, it's tough to stop them, even for a really good defensive team like Dallas. But the way this series is twisted and turned, there's almost no scenario that I couldn't foresee in Game 7.
I agree with that. You know, I'll tell you this: like, we had Hutchinson, the goalie now for Colorado in Toronto this year, and he really had a difficult year. Like, I think for a lot of fans up here, to see that the way that Colorado has come back to win two games with him in goal has been a bit of a surprise. I mean, they blitzed Dallas at the beginning of the game on Monday, and that one was over before it started, when it was 5-0 in the first period. But last night he gave up that really ugly first goal, and I think a lot of us up here were like, uh-oh, here we go. And basically Dallas goes right down the ice and scores and just Colorado goes right down the ice and scores and controls the game. So I think I think you're right. It just shows that when the Avalanche are going and they're coming at you downhill, good luck handling that. But I think for a lot of us where I live here in Toronto, watching, you know, the way they've controlled the games with Hutchinson and goal has been really something, really surprising.
You know, what's great about this series, Elliot, is, and the league talks about this all the time, they love when you could be watching a game and a team's down a couple of goals and the other team comes roaring back. It's got the lead changes. It's got what a lot of people say, well, you know, I love the intensity of hockey, but I don't like when a team jumps up by one or two and you're thinking, well, boy, it's going to be really tough. You rarely see a team come back. Not in this series. You've had all kinds of twists.
Yes, and that's good. Like, you want that, right? Like, you want excitement. You want drama. You want things that surprise you. And I think a lot of people thought the series was over when the second Colorado goalie went down. And now all of a sudden, as you guys said, we're looking at a Game 7. I think a lot of people thought that the Vancouver series was over when their number one goalie went down. And all of a sudden, you know, the kid Demko put up a great game, and there's Game 6 tonight, and there could be Game 7 tomorrow. You certainly, I don't know if you want the craziness that ended the NBA game last night where the referees basically took over and decided it. I don't think you ever want that, but you want drama, and we're getting drama. There's no question about it.
Yeah, you mentioned Thatcher Demko, who, unless you're really on top of things, you probably don't know much about. He sounds like he would be a professor, a guy with a pipe, you know, sitting by a fireside or something. But the Predators did see him, I think, once. I know they're high on him. It's an interesting situation developing with that young Vancouver team, with Markstrom being a free agent at the end of the season. So what's the market for Markstrom? And is Demko now a guy that they're like, well, if he was our starter, we'd be okay?
You know, well, maybe that's what I'll tell him to do. I'll send a note to the people I know who work for the Canucks and say that Demko should play in a smoking jacket tonight. Like, that would be a good idea.
Be a good poster for your wall.
Yeah, that would be very good. You know, it's a weird off season. Like, if you take a look at the playoffs right now and the way it's setting up, the number one goalie in Vancouver until he got hurt is a UFA. The number one goalie in Vegas, Robin Lehner, is a UFA. The 1A in New York, because Varlamov is the number one, that's Thomas Greiss, he's a UFA. And the backup in Philly, actually, I can't remember what Brian Elliott is. But I think that all of these, like, I don't know if there's ever been a more volatile goalie market before. Like, you look at the unrestricted free agents. There's Markstrom. There's Leonard. There's Holtby. I mean, those guys have all wow. been starters. There's good 1A guys like Khudobin from Dallas, Greitz from the Islanders, Cam Talbot from Calgary. And then there's some really good goalies who are potentially available in trade. Matt Murray from Pittsburgh, although he had a rough year this year, and Frederick Anderson in Toronto, potentially. Hmm. So I think that there's a lot of goalies out there. It's kind of a flooded market. I don't know if we've ever seen this before. So we're in a situation here where, and also because of the tighter cap and the COVID world, we don't really know where all these musical chairs are going to go and how many people are going to be available and who's going to get squeezed. So it's going to be a wild market for the off-season goalies. I think Carolina wants to upgrade, and some of these teams have to make decisions. Calgary's got to make decisions on what it wants to do. I think Edmonton wants to make at least one potential change. You know, Darcy Kuemper could be available in Phoenix, and you saw what he did in the postseason. So there's a lot out there, and it's going to be interesting to see where all this settles.
I can see 100% why the Blues made the move for Jake Allen to clear some space mm-hmm. to hopefully sign Pietrangelo. I'm trying to figure out what's in it for Montreal. That's a lot of money to budget for two veteran goalies. So what is their thinking with that deal?
What, you think $15 million in goal is a lot? Like,
that's a little steep.
I'm trying to figure out if it's ever been higher. I don't know of a situation where a team has ever spent more money in goal. Dallas was at $9 million a couple of years ago, but this is like obviously dwarfs that. This is the situation there. Montreal's got a lot of capital. They have space for next year. So even though it looks strange and ridiculous, it's not something, at least at this time, that they can't handle. So that's number one. Allen is only under contract for one more year. So it's not like you're sitting there and saying they've really hamstrung themselves for a few seasons. It's a one-year situation. One or two, I can't remember if it's one or two of the Montreal coaches coached him in junior, so they know him. And the other thing here is, like, I went back the last 3 years and looked up the Canadiens' numbers when Carey Price doesn't start, and their goals against average is 3.25, and their save percentage is right around 900, and both those numbers are below average. I think the Canadiens have thrown away way too many points with the backup position, and they've just said, we're putting an end to this. Now, they have a really good prospect, a kid by the name of Caden Primo, gives him another year in the minors. Until he's ready, but I understand this move for them. It makes sense to me.
Elliot, this is on the Predator front here, and I'm just curious. I was reading The Athletic had a good piece on, you know, how they do their rankings of prospects, and the Predators yep. rank pretty low right now, quite honestly, but there's a couple of guys that seem to be in the plans for next year, and, you know, as John Hines said, we don't want just to play these guys. If we're going to play young players, they have to help us win. Eli Tolvanen, yeah. we've been waiting for a long time on. We've been keeping close tabs. It's taken a lot longer than maybe we initially thought because of that splash he made in the Olympics and the KHL. When you talk to different people about him, do they still think he could have the upside that we all hoped back in the day?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, one of the things like I've kind of learned is that one of the things that I've kind of learned over the years, because I was a kid myself, is that, you know, first of all, he's come over to North America. You got to get used to North America. Number two, you're a kid, and we all go through different situations when we're young. You know, where's our heads? Where are our heads at? What's our maturity level at? And I'm not saying he's immature. I just think some people are ready before others. You know, how dedicated are you? Things like that. I think the other thing, too, is the AHL is a really tough league. Like, it is, people don't get credit. The league doesn't get credit for how hard it is. Sometimes there are guys who, you know, they don't really show it all the way until they get up. Like, a guy like him, there aren't as many guys with his offensive talent in the American Hockey League as he has. And what I'm wondering in Nashville is if they're kind of looking at it like, okay, when he gets up here, if we give him a chance to play with our top offensive players, are we going to see another level that we haven't seen yet in the American Hockey League? And I bet you that's a question that the Predators are asking themselves. Like, what happens if he comes up here and plays with our top guys? Is there another
Matt Duchene is the, what everybody is wondering. Is that yes. a match?
Is that a match? Or like, even if you break up your number one line, I don't know if you would after the playoffs this year. But yes, I think you have to find that out. Like, one of the best things I really believe is that you can, it's always easier to solve your problems internally than externally. And that's why I think you at least have to give Toivonen the look and see what you get. You know, I'm sure there's always talk about guys have to earn their opportunities. You don't want to give someone something that they don't deserve. But at some point in time, you just have to say, we're going to try this and see where it goes. And I just think you're at that point with them.
The other one I want to ask you about, I'm just curious if he has come across your radar. He plays right there in the OHL. It's Philip Tomasino, who it's rare for them to talk about a prospect that might be ready at his age. Usually it's the road goes through Milwaukee. It's happened for virtually all of their guys other than Seth Jones and a rare exception, Scott Hartnell. But where does Tomasino fit on the spectrum for you?
Well, I haven't seen a lot of them, but I have two co-workers who see a lot of the junior players in the area here. And that's Jeff Merrick and Sam Cosentino, and they like them. I know they're fans. So I defer to those guys. They say that you've got a player there, and I will defer to them. Like I just think because of the cap situation and the overall sport cash situation the way it is, that I think some of these guys are going to get more opportunity now faster than maybe we thought. Like, I think it's always nice to say, all right, a guy's going to go down to Milwaukee, he's going to marinate for the Admirals for a few years. But, you know, that's, I think now some guys are going to get rushed faster, particularly in places where you're capped out a bit. Now, the one thing I don't know with Tomasino is what's his contract situation. You know, if he's got a lot of bonuses that push his number up, that could make it harder for him to get in. Like, one of the things that's been happening in Toronto, guys, is they told a couple of their top prospects, one's a defenseman, Rasmus Sandin, another a forward named Nick Robertson, you know, because of our cap situation, if you want to get here faster, you no bonuses. And those players would have gotten bonuses, but they agreed to contracts without them because it would get them to the NHL faster, and now they're both going to be on the roster next year. So I'd have to see what Tomasino's contract is. I don't know it off the top of my head. But if it's a situation where the bonuses aren't problematic, I could see guys getting up there faster.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet. Joins us every Thursday at 1 o'clock here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. So Peter Laviolette has been mentioned. I know he was mentioned in New Jersey before getting passed on that job, but he has been mentioned with Washington. Do you see that as a good fit? What are you hearing on Laviolette when it comes to the Capitals?
Well, I think with New Jersey, it was just a situation where, you know, Laviolette, they couldn't reach a contract. I think Laviolette sees a certain market for himself, and I don't have any problem with that. You should ask for as much as you think you deserve. And I just don't think New Jersey was willing to go there, and that's why that kind of fell apart. I think in Washington, I think he's on their radar. I think they have permission to talk to him. I mean, because I guess he's under contract with you guys for two more years. It creates a situation where the Capitals and the Predators would be able to share some of the costs, depending on what the Capitals are willing to pay him. You know, Washington is not a team historically that believes in paying their coaches a ton. That's why Barry Trotz is with the Islanders now. But I do think there's interest. Immediately when they made the coaching change and their GM, Brian McClellan, came out and said, experienced coach, I had a couple of people who know better than I do say that, look out, he's going to be on Washington's radar and he will be a candidate. And I think that's absolutely the case. But I do think they're going to look at some other candidates too. Gerard Gallant, I would think, would be one. Mike Babcock potentially won. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they at least talked to their old head coach, Bruce Boudreau, and just at least, I don't know if it would go anywhere, but I think they're gonna talk to him at least.
Very interesting. Tell us more about, you know, we know Florida had a GM opening after Dale Tallon, parting ways with him. Bill Zito becomes their new GM, previously with the Blue Jackets. What can you tell us about him?
He is a bulldog. Whenever I talk to teams about Columbus, especially agents, like, it's kind of funny, actually. The agents will say, like, oh, my God, those guys are brutal to negotiate with. And, like, they take hard lines. They take lines, and they don't go very far. And so that's one thing that they talk about with not only with Zito, but Kekalainen, a lot of those guys. Like, they are hard negotiators. You know, Zito's been an agent. He's been an executive. From an organizational point of view, he definitely knows how to create an agenda for a team and go with it from there. And Columbus is a team, they had an agenda, and they didn't vary from it too much. So I think, like, from an organizational structure system, I think they know that. And that's what I think he's going to bring to Florida. You know, the one thing the Panthers really feel is last year, guys, they didn't have a single player on an entry-level contract make a meaningful contribution. It is very, very hard to win that way in the NHL. It's difficult, difficult if not impossible. And they want to do a better job of finding players. And that's what they're going to entrust Zito with. How do we do a better job of finding players? But primarily, guys, he's, you know, like, they've given some big numbers. They're going to have some big negotiations coming up. Alexander Barkov, their number one center, is an unrestricted free agent in 2 years. It's going to be an interesting one.
Elliot, real quick, we know that Todd Reardon is going back to Pittsburgh as an assistant, you know, has ties there from the past, but their former assistants, players, Sergei Gonchar, Mark Recchi, where do you see these guys landing? The Predators, you know, I've kind of thought, could that be a possibility of two former players bringing them in as assistant coach, but have you heard anything about either one of those guys?
I have not. You know, one of those things is both those guys have big ties to Pittsburgh, obviously, right? And both those guys have done very well financially. So it's not like they're going to be hurting for situations. They can pick and choose their spots. I haven't heard much, but you've given me a homework assignment. Now I guess I have to go do it.
Okay.
There we go.
By the way, I just looked up Tomasino's contract. So his AAV is under $1.1 million. I think that gives him a shot.
Okay, so that's conducive to him sticking, you're saying?
Yes, I think that gives him
a better chance if he's ready.
That gives him a shot, yeah.
Elliot, we'll let you go on that. Great stuff, as always. Enjoy the game sixes tonight and maybe game sevens, plural, but we'll see. We'll see. We're
Let's hope so. More drama, the better.
There you go. Elliot, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Great stuff, as always, from Elliot Friedman, the best. He is top level.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of great ones. He's right at the top of the list as far as info, hockey analysis, et cetera. When we come back, we will take one step further with the Predators' prospects, because that's a big part of the equation. And then we'll mix in a couple of things we haven't gotten to yet today, because we have been in the flow. We've talked a lot of Titans today. Some interesting baseball stories going on. Some really big drama in the NBA last night. But we'll talk hockey next, and we'll talk Predators prospects in particular when we come back. Stay tuned. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game. Moving forward here on Darren Donica Chase. Talking a little Predators here, The Athletic has an analyst named Corey Priman, who we've had on the show before, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk to him here again very soon. He is coming out with his rankings of the farm systems, basically. Organizational rankings, he calls them, or if you're from Canada, organizational rankings. They've got the Predators coming in at number 29, which doesn't concern me very much. You know, whether you're 29 or 22 or 18, it's all relative. And I'm, you know, there's ways to change that. They could move up a couple of spots with another good draft. You know, everything will change coming up. But in the short term, there's no question that this is a year, as we just pointed out, that there's going to be opportunities, it looks like, for young players to take a step forward. And the question is going to be, Chase, you know, how good is Eli Tolvanen? How good is Philip Tomasino? How good is Rem Pitlick? You know, these are guys, for example, that are candidates to jump in there. But
sure,
I keep the line that keeps sticking with me is John Hines. We're trying to win. You know, we're not here to just let these guys get their feet wet and, you know, let's see how they do. If you're in a total rebuilding situation, then you could do that and say, whatever you get, you get. Let's just see how they roll. If it takes them a while, it takes them a while. But you're in that fine line of wanting young players to come in and succeed. Elliot used the example of the Panthers. If you don't have anybody on your roster contributing who's making league minimum or entry-level contracts, it's going to be hard to win. Even if you've got some guys doing some good things, it's just you're not going to have the depth that you need, and it's going to screw up your salary cap. You're going to be paying too much money for the lower level jobs on there. It's going to show up somewhere. So this is an interesting take by Pronman, especially on let's focus on Tolvanen and let's focus on Tomasino.
Okay,
he's got them both rated as very good NHL player. Right. So these guys are going to play in the NHL. Right. That's not in question. But the question is, are they going to be guys that help you win? And are they going to be guys that help you win this year?
Well, yeah. And that's the most important question. I mean, because
you
got to win. You got to win this year.
You're trying. I mean, you're not throwing up the white flag and saying we're totally rebuilding. That's just not how they're going to do it. You're going to try to they're going to make some changes. But you're still trying to win. You're trying to get back to top level where you feel like you can start you can get to the playoffs and feel like you have a chance to win.
Right. And you know, you heard David Poile mention Eli Tolvanen by name when, you know, asked about, all right, who's somebody you can put on that second line with Matt Duchene? He goes, well, we'd like it to be Eli Tolvanen. So if that turns out to be right, then all right, that's going to help you win. Because that's a second line winger again, you know, next to a, let's be honest, a potential first line center. But you have Johansson. You don't want to break up the Jofa line, so you put those two together, and whether you know, figure out who's on the other wing, and you feel much better about that second line. But again, you have to see it. And I thought Elliot made a good point about the American League, about the AHL. The novice fan hears the AHL and go, oh, okay, it's the minor leagues.
Yeah, you should be lighting up the AHL.
Right. It's especially a tough league.
It's a very tough league, and it's an older league in a lot of cases. You know, it's like AAA baseball. When you go to a AAA game, the kids aren't all, you know, the players aren't all 23, 24. You got some 29, 30-year-old veterans in there that really know how to play, know how to pitch. They're not big league prospects anymore, but they're really good baseball players. So the same thing happens to the AHL. You got some guys that have been in that league for a while that really know how to play. They just don't have maybe the elite skills that you see at the NHL level.
Yeah, and we forget Tolvanen is 20 years old. So, I mean,
he's still very young.
There's time there. But I do agree. You got to see something now. You just give him a chance, see what happens, and finding that balance of, okay, seeing what happens, but also trying to win, I know is difficult.
This is my question, because it's hard. Like, in a perfect world, you stick him on the second line with Duchene, and he's the answer. He's a good blend. Duchene loves, he's a great passer. Eli Tolvanen is the shooter that can finish off of those great passes. He can keep up. He plays good defense, and he holds the job as the second line left winger. Okay, that is the perfect scenario. The worst case scenario is he comes back from camp, or he comes to camp from the KHL. And he's like, well, you know, everybody's like, he's still not ready. And that wouldn't be, that's not out of the question. He's still right. only 21, right? Maybe he's not ready till he's 23. That could happen. He may not be ready for a couple more years.
Right.
But then there's the in-between of he shows you some stuff, and he has a couple of good weeks, maybe even a couple of good months, but the inconsistency might be there, too. That's when you get into this dilemma of, Do we keep playing him? Do we keep pushing him out there even if he goes through some long droughts, which is very possible, and ride it through? Or do you get to a spot in the season where you're like, man, we got to try something else. We're trying to win right now. We can't be patient enough. We can't be as patient as we want to be with him.
Yeah, and that's going to be the tough part. And it's even harder to figure out because we don't know what the setup is going to be for camp. You know, are they going to play preseason games? Is it going to be in a bubble? Yeah. You know, what is everything going to look like with all of that? When is it going to start? Is it, you know, the 1st of December? Is it going to be in January? I mean, these are all very important questions. And so it's not a normal, I mean, think about this, put this in perspective for a second. It's September 3rd. We should be in a normal time talking about, well, the Predators are going to open training camp in a couple of weeks. That's obviously not the case because of everything going on. So that you gotta factor that part in. Did you see enough from the return to play camp that told you, okay, I feel good about this. There's something here when we get back to regular camp that he's going to be ready to go. He's playing in the KHL. Is that going to help speed up the process to get him to that point? I don't think they let him go to the KHL if they didn't see something in the return to play camp that said, all right, we need to get him on the ice during this downtime because he's close. That's kind of what I think.
This was a big stat that Prahman points to. He didn't have huge numbers, goals, and assists in the AHL, but remember how good Milwaukee was, right? They dominated.
Yeah.
So they had a lot of guys on particular nights that were scoring. But through all of that, Tolvanen finished 4th in the AHL in shots on goal. So he's driving possession. He's getting the puck down there. He's getting shots. He's getting looks. So that's a good sign. So we'll see. There's a lot of good detail in here on his game and, you know, potential big upside and where the work has got to be done for him to be a really good, not just a very good, but like a excellent NHL player. I mean, that's what you're hoping. You're hoping to hit it big because they don't have a long list, right? That why are the Braves good? They had a list of 10 or 15 prospects a couple of years ago. They were like, hey, man, this is getting to the top of Baseball America's lists and stuff. But the key is for, you know, some of those guys to reach the heights at the major league level, like Acuna, like Soroka. I mean, they're getting those guys up there and they're doing it, right? And you got a better chance for that to happen if you have a list of 15 guys. If you got a list of 5 guys and you're like, well, 3 of these guys or 4 of these guys need to all hit it big for us to get where we need to go, that your odds aren't as good, right? It's better to have 10 chances to have 3 stars than 5 chances to have 3 stars. That's where I think they're having a little trouble with the Predators. They've got some potential, but we know how everybody's path is different. So Tomasino is the other one.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I'm just looking at the history here. It's hard for me to see this guy just jumping in and he's ready to take an everyday job. I just think that's going to be tough.
Well, and you have with him, you know, David Poile used the phrase, we got to get back to the Predator way. Well, the Predator way was all roads to Nashville. Went through Milwaukee.
I would say that would be on the list of mantras.
And Tolvanen, you know, he's been through Milwaukee.
So the question is Tomasino special enough to make the jump without spending time in Milwaukee?
And I'll
believe that when I see it. I'm really excited that they're even talking about him in that term, in those terms, because that is rare.
So the top 4 prospects on this list that Prahman has, Tolvanen 1, Fabbro 2. So Fabro's here. We already know that.
Right. So Fabbro's more, we know we've seen him.
Right.
We know what he is at this point and where he needs to go. So that's, I think we know what his role on the team is going to be too.
Tomasino 3, Trennan 4. I right now, Jakob Trenin's making the team out of camp. That's just, I truly believe that. I think he's done enough. I wish we'd seen him more.
Agree.
See
so,
him.
So the question is, what is his role? Because I think you're right. I think he's going to be on the team.
What,
so
this is leading me to. This is leading me to that question. So let's just pretend for a second that Trenin, Tomasino, and Tolvanen are all show them enough that they're ready. They need to be on this team. So that's three guys. You have, let's say that Smith and Granlund, you don't bring them back. So you have two spots right there that you could put those guys in. But what other pieces move around to make room for all three to actually play, as you just brought up? Well, all right, Tolvanen, you're going to pencil him in on the second line with Duchesne. Now, Tomasino is listed as a center. I don't know this. Can he play wing, or is he pretty much just a centerman?
I have to think he can play wing. But as we know, that's not a given. Usually it's much easier for a center to go over and play wing than a wing to come in to play center. Yeah.
Another question in this entire scenario is Turris on the team? I think probably not. That you've either found a dance partner and you've made some sort of trade, or you've bought him out. But I would think that in all of this, Turris is probably not on the team. So do you put Tomasino, are you going to surround Duchesne with two rookies on the second line, or do you have...
I can't see that.
I don't see that. You know, Bonino's your third line centerman. I think Trenin probably could fit there, that if Smith is gone, then you have Trenin with Bonino and Rocco Grimaldi potentially.
Yeah. I think Trenin's versatile enough. I can see him in several different roles. I can see him as a crasher on a fourth line, maybe a third line guy if he keeps developing. I think it's a little bit lofty to think he's ever going to be a second line top six guy, but you never know. He's made a lot of progress in the last couple of years. But again, I would invite people to look at Corey Pronman's thing. He doesn't see the big upside, a top six guy in Trenin. He sees a little bit more.
Which is fine. You don't.
And that's fine. Yeah, he could, but he can still bring a lot to the table for sure. I think if you go on the assumption, and I don't know if it is a full assumption, but Smith, Granlund, and Turris are all not back, then you got some room to try somebody else. You would need to have another top six guy that you bring in somewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
I think you do. I think that probably happens under that scenario. Now, it depends. Everything really, to me, depends on the Turris situation and how much of the money goes away. I don't feel like all of it's going to go away.
Oh, there's no way.
You're either going to buy him out and then you're stuck, you know, paying $2 million a year. Or if you do find a dance partner, they're going to be like, sure, but you got to keep half of it or whatever. So that you got to factor that part in. You know, are you going – you have to address the issue that we keep bringing up of you got to find the gritty guy, the guy that's going to get you some skill and help you but can come in and play in those dirty areas. You know, Patrick Maroon is a name we've thrown around with Tampa. You know, does he fit that mold? But I don't put him as a top six guy. He's more of your third, fourth line help you in that sense. So does he fall into that category? Is there a trade that we haven't even thought of? You do have to, and I don't know if you agree with this, but I believe you do have to look a year ahead of if you're going to bring somebody that has more than a year in a contract, is that somebody that's going to take a spot that you're going to want to protect from Seattle? You know, you got to think about those things.
You do have to think about Seattle for sure. When we come back, we will hit a little hoops, a little baseball. But before we turn it over to Jared and the GM, which I'm sure will include a lot of football talk starting at 2. So we have hit our football quota for the day. Boy, we were all over it. We had a lot of great stuff in the first couple hours talking football. We have not talked about Tom Seaver, a guy that was really special to a lot of people who passed away. It was a big night in baseball last night. Mookie Betts had a big hand in it. Another Nashvillian had a big night. You may not know he's a Nashvillian. We'll talk about that when we come back, plus two great games in the NBA last night. So all of these questions with the Predators prospects lead you back to a lot of Predators questions, which all funnel back to one thing, second line. who do you play with Matt Duchene? That's going to be the pressing question, I think, throughout the offseason. But gave you a little insight there. Stay tuned. Final segment coming up here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Boy, 80s theme today from Elijah. Good stuff. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe for the final segment. Jared and the GM coming up top of the hour. Thought we'd hit a couple of things non-football here, non-hockey. We talked most of the hour on the Predators and the NHL. Some fun games going on tonight. Two game sixes. We'll see if Barry Trotz and crew can eliminate the Flyers on the second try. Flyers came up with a huge overtime win to extend that series. And then, of course, you've got Vegas trying to stave off the Vancouver Canucks. They're up 3-2 in that one. That's the doubleheader tonight. NBA had a couple of interesting games last night, which we'll get to in a moment, but a couple of baseball things. Anybody know that Adam Duvall lives in Nashville? He played at Louisville, but he had 3 home runs at Fenway last night. The Red Sox actually had a handle on the game, but the Braves came roaring back and won. The Braves continue to find ways to keep their distance and have a decent lead in the NL East.
Yeah, back-to-back nights that the Braves have had a hat trick from somebody. Ozuna did it a couple nights ago, 3 home runs. Duvall goes last night. I loved the Adam Duvall pickup for the Braves when they did that trade a couple years ago. I think that was one of those post-trade deadline moves that they made. Now, that doesn't exist anymore because it was always silly. But so they did. They had that, and he played most of the year last season in Gwinnett with the Stripers in AAA. But he's been clutch. He's been a good guy for them to come off the bench and help them out when they need to. Now this year he's platooned some in the outfield as they've rotated through with the addition of the DH. So Ozuna has been the DH some. They've had Markakis or they've gone to Duvall. So it was a solid pickup for them, and you're seeing it really pay off. And just good to see that last night. But I actually did know that he lived in Nashville. So.
And the Braves did not make a move for a pitcher at the trade deadline. So that was intriguing.
They got Tommy Malone, so I guess they technically did.
I guess. Not for a guy that you would think, here's a guy that we want and will start for us in a playoff game.
Right.
We'll see if Malone ends up making
it. I mean, that shows you the faith they have in Ian Anderson, that they really like what they have in him. Max Fried, of course, is the ace now with Soroka going down. So they hope that he can help them out. Malone gives them some, hopes to give them some starts. Josh Tomlin, has been good. And then they have, they have a couple of others that are at the alternate site.
Who can get the Dodgers out for 4 or 5 innings?
Right now, the only answer to that to me is Max Fried. But
right, well, he you would hope can give you 6 or 7 innings in a game like that. But they got some big question marks. But they're not alone. There's a lot of teams like that. Mookie Betts hit a game tying homer for the Dodgers last night. The Dodgers continue to dominate. We knew that we kind of had thought that they would, and they are. But they also didn't make a move for a starting pitcher, which was interesting. They're going to rely on some young guys that look like they're going to be pretty good, but there's a lot on Kershaw and Buehler.
Yeah.
Right now, which you feel really good about Buehler and what he's done in the postseason. We know the issues of Kershaw, who's now a year older, but he's had a long list of years where it didn't go well in the postseason, including last year.
I just think with a 60 game season with expanded playoffs, even though the Dodgers are so dangerous, it's just really hard to predict, what team is going to come out of either league. I mean, Tampa's hot right now, but the Yankees are obviously hanging around. It's just very hard to pinpoint if a team gets in, what's going to happen. And, going back to the Braves for a second, they've done a lot of this. And Acuna's been up and down. He's been hurt. He's supposed to come back against Washington. Albies has been out. So if you get a healthy lineup, what does that do in the National League with the Braves? And, it's if pitching can give you, like you said, 4 or 5 innings and then go to the bullpen, then I think that you feel pretty good about Atlanta. But it's just so tough to predict right now with things being as tight as they are. And I think it's fun. I think they're on to something. It's not 60 games necessarily, but you know, I like the DH in the National League. I kind of hope it sticks around at this point. The runner on second's growing on me. I mean, there are certain rules that have made it exciting, but it's tight in both leagues, and I think fans enjoy that.
The Rays beat the Yankees last night in the game everybody was wondering about with the beanball exercises or near misses. They suspended Aroldis Chapman for 3 games. He's appealed it, but sometimes you don't see a suspension if you don't actually hit the guy, and he didn't hit him. But he got 3 games, so we'll see how the appeals goes. They suspended each manager for a game, so they didn't manage last night, but the guy who had it thrown right at his dome, Brosseau, hit a home run in the first inning and hit a second home run. So the Rays kind of flexed their muscles last night and beat the Yankees again. They have had their way with the Yankees. You still have a lot of key players hurt, and that'll be the question for them is can they get healthy? Because the Yankees aren't the Yankees right now.
How about the White Sox?
Well, somebody here on this show said that they have a lot of prospects and they could be the sleeper.
Yeah,
I said that. I didn't say they're going to win it. But man,
they're a game back.
They in a deep division.
Yeah,
the Indians and Twins are good, and we knew they would be good. But
and Detroit's hung around.
Detroit's been better than they have
500.
Been.
Yeah,
I mean, they couldn't be much worse, but they've been way better.
They're better than I thought they were going to be.
Right, and yet you have the White Sox that have a chance to win that thing. They have a ton of high-rated prospects. If you don't follow the prospect list, you're like, who are these guys? But these are guys that they've been hoping would blossom, and they're starting to do it.
Yeah.
They are starting to do it. A couple of guys one guy in particular, Dylan Cease, who was one of the guys that Tim Corbin had signed that didn't come.
Right.
He signed out of high school. I mean, he's starting to become one of their guys, and they've got a bunch of hitters, Luis Robert and some guys like Eloy Jimenez, a guy that shined in the college, Nick Madrigal, high first-round pick, who was a tremendous college player at Oregon State. So they're littered with guys like that. It's starting to happen on the South side.
Yeah, it totally is.
And a quick word about Tom Seaver, a guy, and I shared this on Twitter. When I was 13, my dad gave me a book, and he's got a little note inscribed in it. I actually looked at it last night when I heard the news that Tom Seaver had passed away. And, you know, Tom Seaver had been sort of out of the public eye for a number of years. He was a long-time announcer. Like, there were years where he pitched and was still an all-star, great pitcher. And then if his team wasn't in the playoffs, he would join the broadcast crew for the World Series or playoff games. So I learned a lot by just watching television broadcasts that he did. But this book was really special to me, The Art of Pitching. And I was right at the right age where I was interested and I could follow the detail that he wrote about. There's so many great things in that book. I would recommend if anybody has a young pitcher, it still holds up today. There's a lot of different ways the game is taught today, and a lot of things, you know, drive line and getting velocity and stuff like that, that's evolved since he wrote that book 30 something years ago. But there's still a lot of great stuff with the mental part of it, experimenting with grips, you know, how you hold the baseball, what does it do, how to set up a hitter, what are you thinking about when you're out there. It's awesome. And I was thinking back to I happened to read that book, and then my next game as a pitcher was in a big playoff game in my 13-year-old Little League. On the big mound, I beat the other team in our league, and I just pitched great. And everybody saw me with the book at school the previous few days, and they were like, you read that book? What's going on with the Tom Seaver book? It's all about the book. And I was like, you know what? It was all about the book. So I just thought back. So Tom Seaver, I know, impacted any baseball fan for the last couple generations. So, you know, may he rest in peace for sure.
Yeah, and I know that hit home for you when that news came out last night. But Yeah, so hate to hear that. To end on a positive note, I guess you saw that the great Vin Scully is on Twitter.
Big time.
And he is following 23 people, our entities, on Twitter. And I looked through the list, and I see a bunch of Dodgers sites, SNY, New York Sports, Bobby Nightingale, Larry King, Clayton Kershaw, the Dodgers, SportsCenter, Barack Obama, MLB, and 102.5 The Game.
That is blinking fertilizer.
Thank you, Vin. Yes.
We're not going to ask why or how. We're just going to take it as a compliment.
Yeah, it's awesome that he has jumped in and followed 102.5 The Game. Maybe he listens out in L.A., I don't know, but I saw that last night, and I was like, that's pretty darn cool.
Tyler Kepner, who, by the way, wrote a great tribute to Tom Seaver in the New York Times, the impact that Tom Seaver had in New York once upon a time, huge, but it goes beyond New York. I recommend that if you want to read a piece, a tribute to Tom Seaver. But Tyler texted me last night. He said, Vin Scully is following you guys. I was like, what? That can't be. But he is.
So random.
We'll take it.
Awesome.
We'll take it. And I'm sorry we didn't get a deep discussion on the NBA. Two great games last night, though. The Game 7, Rockets and OKC. What a great game that was. The Rockets
survive.
Steve Nash is coaching the Nets. What a great story that is. And the Bucks are down 2-0. What a crazy ending that game. Elliot talked about it. The two calls at the end of the game. Oh, boy. I don't know. I think those are no calls. Contrast that with the end of the OKC game where they didn't call anything. They let him play a couple stretches, but good drama. Good drama in the NBA.
Willie, right, good job.
Good stuff. We made it through. Hopefully Darren will be back with us tomorrow. Jared and the GM coming up next right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.